My name is Ricky. I'm an alcoholic. Like they said, I do have 7 years. It's been, it's really passed by a lot quicker than I thought it would. You know, I look back and the time and all the, everything that's happened, it's kind of a blur, really. You know? But in truth, I've had 8 years of addiction, you know, so I'm really not quite there yet where I can say, well, I've had as much time in my life as I had being addicted, right? So, alcoholism for me, I think, started before I was born, which I think many people can relate to that. My family had a long history of alcoholism, right? My parents, my grandparents, you know, and it was always the men, right? Very, very rarely we had a couple chicks in there that ended up drinking, but the difference was is that the men, it's kind of like a prolonged sentence, right? Their whole life they're going to be alcoholic. And for the women, the ones that did do it, the rare ones, they all died, all of them. So it was in my family without me knowing it. I remember growing up when I was little, I think I was maybe 6, 7 running around. There'd be a split, you know, in family gatherings. So my brothers and my family would be on one side, you know, outside around a fire or something. My mom would be inside with my sisters cooking. Well, they'd be all drinking outside, you know. So of course, I'm a boy. I wanted to be out there with them. I'd go out there. And, you know, they'd give me sips of their beer. They I guess that's how they were raised too. You know, they didn't know any better. And, you know, that's how I started drinking, I think, when I was really little. Well, I realized what the beer did after a while. So they wouldn't want to get me drunk. It's not like they just thought it was funny. Now, look, he's drinking the beer. But I knew if I drank from each one of them and I left and came back and did it again a few times, I'd get that feeling, right? That buzz. And of course I'd get sick and I'd throw up and stuff and mom get mad. But every time we had another party, the same thing would happen. So I think for me it was harder to see the problems. I look back on it now and I could see the stability just wasn't there, right? With my dad. He was either really nice in a good mood because he was happy, so he'd buy us pizza or something, or he was really just off, right? That's kind of what I found in myself later on too. My upbringing was slow, you know, like anybody's. We had to go to school, had to learn everything, right? But I think in junior high is when it started kind of getting bad. I had that moment of where you make a decision, kind of, right? As all my friends, I lived up here in the north side, right? So everybody was kind of just involved in gangs. Your families were, you know, everybody was embedded in just the culture there. So I had a decision. You know, I was with my sister and I was with my friends, and my friends were like, "Come here, man, you know, let's hang out." And my sister grabbed me and she said, "No, man, don't go over there. If you go over there, you know, it's going to be over." I didn't go the first time, and later on I got approached again, and I was alone, kind of, you know. It was a big culture shock. I didn't realize the difference between the schools and the, you know, sides of town until I was in junior high, and then I saw the difference. And I saw I was alone without, you know, my friends. So I joined them to feel a part of, to feel welcome. And it felt good. But then this sense of pride came to me, right? We didn't have pride in the athletics or any of those things, right? We had pride in our game. That's what we had pride in, right? It was a false sense of pride, though. You know, because we were hurting ourselves, we were hurting each other, you know. But there was camaraderie, you know. From that, that's when I started getting into drugs. It just became a part of it, right? People approached me. They were doing harder drugs than I was at that age, but I kind of maintained with alcohol. I started off drinking alcohol, you know, running around right here by the Oval, just running around drinking. I thought it was funny. And I wasn't ashamed of it or wasn't scared. Like, people, you know, I knew people, they'd be trying to hide it. We'd be walking around with 40s, you know. We thought it was funny. I didn't think it was a problem. I didn't think it was a big deal. I was failing school. I failed 7th grade, you know, so that shows you how committed I was to my studies. I didn't care, you know. I got kicked out of the summer school because same thing, you know, the gang thing. I didn't want to tell on somebody as we did something, you know, and then they kicked me out. They said, "Well, we're not going to play, you know, just get out." So that was my first kind of lesson, and all I got out of it from what I remember was a ride. So I had to take the bus every day after school. It was in La Jolla, which is on the other side of town. I don't know if you guys know anybody from Visalia. So I was going to take, you know, I got kicked out, and it was kind of like a dream. Like, whoa, did this really happen? You know, this consequence? Am I going to fail? And all my friends are right there with one of their dads, you know, and he's like, "Come here," and they gave me a ride, like, home, and that was it. That's all I got out of it, right? The rest of the summer, I don't remember what I did. I think I just, you know, party, right? I moved. I went to Farmersville to stay with my cousins, and I went to school over there. And again, it wasn't one of my main interests. I didn't really care about it. It felt like prison to me. You know, and we'd smoke and we'd drink and we'd do everything during school. You know, it was more like, what are you going to teach me? You know, they're trying to teach you about like algebra, all these things. You know, I'm out here trying to survive. You know, people are, my friends are, I had friends that died in seventh grade. I had one of them, you know, he shot himself. They were looking at a gun, you know, and he just, boom, you know, my friend Rocky. My other friend, she was in the wrong place, wrong time. They shot her too. You know, these are all the things I, growing up. So the drinking was kind of a way to ease the pain. I felt like I deserved it in a way. You know, thinking back on it now, it's kind of ridiculous, but that's how I felt at the time. You know, this is kind of a way to dull it. But it's still there. It doesn't go away. It just kind of, it kills it for a while. It makes you numb to it. You know? So, I was there, I think, all summer. You know, afterwards, I just got more embedded into it. You know, it became normal. You know? And I remember, drinking was a part of it. You know, every Saturday, every week. Started off weekend thing, right? Little parties, little things like that. Keggers. Running around with everybody. I thought it was fun. There's a lot of dangerous stuff that goes on, man. There's a lot of dangerous stuff that happens. People lose their cool, right? I remember one time we were driving home from Exeter from some party. My friend, he was the same age I was. He just had more, you know, opportunity, more money, so he had a car. I remember between the two of us, we had the steering wheel, right? And we could kind of manage, but we were just like, you know, whoa. And every time, we did it all kinds of, so many times, I can't remember how many times we did that. You know, we could have died. Right? But this was all, it became normal to me, that the school was becoming less important. My family, you know, they told me, I knew the whole deal. My brothers, one of them went to jail, right? He went to prison for a murder that he didn't commit, but he was just in the wrong place at the wrong time, and, you know, they pardoned him. But I knew all that growing up. You know, they all had went through it. Another one went to jail saying, he's in jail now. I gotta send him soups. You know? I gotta send him money, cause he just doesn't learn, man. He's older than me. He doesn't get it. You know, he was caught crossing the border with weed, and he got away with it twice, and he kept, sometimes it's not even the drugs that they're doing, it's the lifestyle, right? It's the culture that you're trying to be a part of, right? There's consequences that come with it, you know? But, school and all that wasn't a part of it. My family, my sisters, you know, they all try to keep an eye on me and try to help me as best they could, but they just, you know, I wasn't listening. I thought I was special. That's what it was, I'm the youngest of nine kids, right? So that's how, I don't know, that's just how my parents always treated me, like I was special. So I grew up with that confidence. And in some instances, it's good for people, right? You have this confidence, you can go and you think, you know, oh yeah, I can do all these things. In others' words, and I think with addiction, it's really bad. Because you'll think you're in control. You'll think you have control, right? And you don't. It's affecting you like anybody else. You know, it took its toll and, I remember I got a girlfriend, I think, in freshman year. She's a beautiful girl, a beautiful Irish girl. Right? All my friends gave me crap about it. But, you know, I that was my first real relationship. And looking back on it now, I wasn't really ready for a relationship. I was still selling. I would give her my drugs to hold, you know. I never let her do it. I didn't want her to do it. But I remember her dad hated me. You know, he hated my guts. Because he thought all I'm going to do is ruin it, you know. And that's what I didn't want to do, was ruin it. That was the one thing in life that was kind of, you know, still pure, I guess. Everything else was tainted. But, you know, I cheated. I did all kinds of stuff. I put her through a lot of stuff, man, you know. And I lost it. I remember when I lost it, I was just like, that was just one more thing, you know. I dropped out of school, got in harder drugs, you know. Harder drugs became a part of my life as well. And the drinking was all just normal for us at that point. I just kind of took the losses as they came. The thing that suffered most, I think, was my self-image, you know, my self-respect. Because that confidence I talked about was still a part of me. I still thought I was special. I still thought somehow I'm going to make something happen with this, right? But it was all going downhill really fast, you know? I ended up living at people's houses that, you know, because I couldn't do everything I wanted to do at my house. I could to an extent, but my parents, you know, they already went through it with my other brothers, so they wouldn't let me. So I'd go to my other friend's house, you know, my friend turned me on to this lady that she partied, you know? And we were young kids. I think I was like 16, 17 at the time, but I could get drugs. I could get better drugs than she could. What she could get for me, though, was liquor, right? Liquor was like commonplace over there. So I'd get the drugs, and she'd buy it, of course, but she'd get the liquor for us. So for a good, I think, half a year, you know, no school, no even caring about that. Had the cops called a couple times because my family was worried. They're like, where the hell is this guy? He's lost. And I was over there just, you know, getting high and drunk with these people way older than me, you know. And it was just a part of it, man. It was just chaos. I'm thinking back on it now, right? every day. And then I saw her suffering through it too. I saw her, she had lost her kid. This was a big impact on her. She lost the business that she had with her husband. She lost her husband. All these things, I didn't see it. I didn't connect it with the alcohol or the drugs, right? I just thought it was, oh, that sucks. You know, you want to get high? That's what I thought. I thought, well, it can't be, you know, it didn't come to me that's what it was, you know? Remember, Crown Royal was the drink back then. You know, I don't know if anybody drank Crown Royal, man. We downed bottles of that stuff, right? Just bottles and bottles, and we collect the little bags, and I remember at one time, man, I started thinking, like, I didn't have any negative effect on me yet, but I thought, man, when I'm older, you know, this is going to affect me, dude. You know, I'm doing some damage. I'm not eating, right? I'm here for days, and all we're doing is drinking and getting high, room full of smoke, you know, and it's just like, ah. But then, you know, that was only for like 5 minutes, and then I went back to the rest of the week was getting high and drunk. That's the weird thing about it, man, is the damage you're doing, you don't realize you're doing it, right? Well, during that time, the gang thing too, man, for a while, that's all I ran on, you know, was this belief that, you know, it's about culture. Yeah, you're kind of giving back a culture. It's not your real culture, though, and I don't think anybody really knows it, you know. You trace back to where you came from, everybody's kind of deluded by now in America, right? But you think it's your culture, and what happened was there was these people I met in the process of it, right? My friends would introduce me to these different dealers and stuff, and the whole time we're drinking and getting high. So I met these people that my friend introduced me to. I didn't know who they were, where they were from, but they had some good stuff, right? So we start selling together, and I start making them some money, and we're doing cool. I find out later that one of my other friends, they didn't get into it because they're a different gang. They're from a different part of town. I didn't know this in the beginning, right? And I saw older people there doing the same thing I was. You know, they go, they do their business, and they leave. So I thought, okay, well, it's no big deal. Right? It's all money anyways. We're all doing what we're doing anyways. Well, there's conflict, you know. My friend, he got stabbed. He ended up getting stabbed by one of them, you know. So they saw me, and they're like, well, you're still going over there. And I'm like, well, what the hell, you know, what's the big deal? You lose trust, you know. All that stuff started happening. And I heard of these cliches way before I even got into it. My brothers, everybody would tell me, you know, all that stuff ain't going to help you when you go to jail. It's not going to matter. And it's going to be about survival. All the people you think are your friends you're going to be with forever, you're not even going to know where they are in a while. And it's true, you start letting these little things go, like the girl I was talking about, you know. My family would look at me like, are you crazy, man? You know, she's a good girl. And I just lied, be like, oh, I don't care. In reality, inside, you know, I'm breaking apart. My friend, he got stabbed, you know, I'd be like, oh, well, that sucks, you know, you shouldn't have messed with him. On the inside, though, I'm thinking, man, that sucks, you know, this is crazy. But it makes your judgment, it makes you just keep trying to roll, right? You keep trying to roll. I was drinking and using constantly. I mean, every day was just, that's all it was for me. There was nothing else really, right? All the people I knew were on it. They were drinking and using, and everybody was. I think I was 17, and we had a good run. I had a good run. I was coming down. I remember sleeping there. I couldn't sleep because I was too high, but I wasn't high. You know what I mean? I don't know if anybody's been there, but... And I just said, you know, I just want a beer, you know. I want a, like, 40. And I gathered up change, and I remember I had enough for a beer. And I go, cool. So I go to my friend's house, of course. But this is the thing about it, right? The addiction, the alcoholism, it's all chaos. All of it, after a while, that's all it is. You don't really have a set schedule. You don't know what you're going to do. So I go to my friend's house, and I say, hey, man, I want a beer, right? So I get a beer. And we drink the beer that I wanted, and I'm still there. And he goes, you know, I'm going to get paid in a little bit, man. You want to roll? I go, yeah, I don't know, man. Because I know something about that day, I knew I shouldn't have went. I knew something was, I was like, this is enough. You know, I need to sleep. I need to rest. I need to relax. But my other friend there, he's about my age too, and he goes, oh, man, you know, let's go. Let's roll. Let's go for a ride. So I roll with this guy, right? We go, pick up the check, and we go and get a couple bottles. We got like Hennessy and... some other, you know, bottles of liquor. We had weed, right? And we're driving around. I pick up one of my other friends by chance. I just saw him, and I go, hey, man, you want to come? And he came with us. We end up out in the cut somewhere, in, like, by, I think, Yemen. I don't know if you guys know where Yemen is. Not Yemen, Yedem. Yedem, yeah, there you go. Some people going, yeah, I know Yedem. Yeah, we were out there to see my friend Psycho Mike. But we were out there, man, and I remember we stopped, and I saw this beautiful sunset, man, and I just laid out in the grass and smoked a cigarette, and I just thought back on everything kind of hit me right then and there, and I just went like, you know, I just want to keep getting high, you know, I can't deal with it. Dropped out of school. My family knows it's taking its toll. I lost the girl that I loved, right? The gang thing ain't doing it no more. It's just not the same no more, right? All this, everybody's dying. Everybody's going to jail. It's just not there no more for me, right? I get back in the car and we start rolling. This guy's going like 80, I think. I remember I was so faded, man, I couldn't even keep my head up. I just saw, I kept looking at the sun. The beautiful sunset. We were driving right into it, too. Well, 1 second, right? Class passes and boom, smash. We hit. I just remember like a roller coaster. I don't know if you've ever been on a roller coaster. Where like your head's kind of going everywhere, right? And you don't see, you don't remember it. You just feel it. You know, and I felt it, and I remember crashing. We crashed right into the trees, right? Jacked the car up. The car was totaled. We probably took out 2 trees. Somehow, miraculously, they're fine. I open my eyes, man. I just see red. All this blood, right? I got a gash right here. I got another one right here. And like I woke up, you know, the adrenaline kicked in. So I walk outside like I'm going to, you know, take care of something. And I throw up, you know, I'm throwing up. So I'm there, you know, in the middle of the field. No one's around. It's just us and our broken car and our, you know, drugs and alcohol. And I try to take a breath, a deep breath, because I'm, you know, panicked. Well, I couldn't breathe. Sharp pain, like someone was stabbing me, was right here. I didn't know what the hell it was. I just remember knowing every time I breathed, it hurt more and more, right? And I felt like I was going to die. I'm like, I'm going to die, man. I'm going to die. So they're carrying me, you know, trying to take care of me. There's blood all over. And they leave me like in this field. 2 of them went back to go do I don't know what, to save a radio or something, they said later. Those are some friends, right? Those are your road dogs, though. They said, yeah, I think more than likely they were just trying to remove the evidence, right? Because he's been through it before. He didn't want to get caught again. So he's, you know, looking out for you, right? You're looking out for you, I guess. And I don't hold it against them, because the truth is, if it was the other way around, I'd be gone at that time. I would have. But they left me there, you know, laid out on a cooler, a broken cooler in the field, you know. And I felt it. I felt like I was going, man. I saw the darkness. Again, the adrenaline kicked in. And I screamed, ah, you know, in the field, just trying to get some help from somebody. Nobody came. I get up and I go, there's a trailer. I kick in the door, you know, I'm trying to find a phone. No phone. So I go back out to the cooler, man, I just give up. I go, you know, if I die, I die, I guess. I don't know. What the hell else can I do? I remember praying, you know, a little fake-ass prayer, you know, you say. I said, if you get me out of this, man, you know, never again, man, never again. I just kind of gave up and, like, tried to take short breaths. And my friend that I just, by chance, I call it chance, and the truth is, I think back now, I think there was something more to that. Because what are the odds, right? I'm going to see this random dude and just call him and like, make him come with us. He came back, that one dude that I called, and he saved me. We stole a damn little, you know, little beat-up mule. I don't know if you guys know what those are. And we jacked it, and we drove into Kauai Delta, you know, and I remember seeing the cameras later, and we drove in there, and I walked in like, I'm dying, you know, and they saw me, and they told me, you know, yeah, your lungs collapsed, you know, and we got to do a CAT scan. I remember going, they gave me morphine because I was in a lot of pain. And I was gone after that. You know, I don't remember what happened. I just remember waking up a couple, like maybe a week later or something, strapped down to the bed, right? Because they said I was violent, which I couldn't believe, right? I'm not violent. I'm a nice guy. They said I was threatening the nurses. I was threatening my family. I'm like, I'm going to kill you guys. Let me out of here. They said the withdrawals were so strong, right? I had alcohol poisoning, right? I don't remember the number, but I remember they said it should have killed me, you know, all that stuff. So I woke up with the big tube, sucking out, you know, strapped down, like, what the hell happened? And the truth is, behind all this, man, is I didn't want none of that to happen. I don't remember ever going, like, I want my life to be screwed up and I want to mess up everything. That was not my goal. My goal was to feel something else than what I felt. To not feel reality. That was it. To just party. To just get high. Everybody that I know that suffered from it, they got psychosis, they're in jail, they died. None of them were necessarily bad or evil people, you know. It's just that's what they suffered way too much for the decisions they made. The decision they made was, I just want to party, man. I just want to get high. And that all that other stuff comes with it somehow, you know. It turns into evil. It turns into pain. It turns into suffering. So you would think, you know, with all this stuff happening that I'd be, I'd have a different attitude. Right? You think, oh, I woke him up, right? That's where the story ends. Nah. I woke up and I got myself together and I told the nurses, I want drugs. I want Vicodins, right? So now, because I knew they had to give it to me. I remember cussing. The thing that used to make me mad was I cuss at the nurses. I call them all these awful names, the doctors too. I get mad at them, try to pull things out of me, and they strap me down again. They just laugh and smile. They're real nice, man. I still remember. I feel bad about that. I should probably go tell them. But anyways, I was there. I did my stint right in the hospital. They drained my lung. And they told me, you know, okay, you can leave. But before they let me leave, my mom came with some lady I didn't know. Some random lady, older lady, and she sat down with me and she goes, she read all the things that were in my system, you know, all these crazy things. I didn't even know I was on these stuff. I guess they were cutting the drugs or something. She's like, you're on heroin, cocaine. I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm on, you know, dope. And she goes, well, that's, you know, that's what came out. And I'm like, okay. But I was telling her, you know, because I was so excited to leave. I was just playing the part. I was like, it's all right. Well, whatever. You know, I'm not in it right now. And she goes, no, you're on Vicodin right now, you know, so... You know, and she said, you know, here's the thing. We have a good program here. You know, we want to invite you to the program and be a part of it. My reaction is right away this defensive, this negative, this anger in me. And the crazy thing was, I don't even remember why. It makes perfect sense now that she would be there. And at the time, though, I was like, how dare you pulling things out of me? You know, I want to get out of here. And telling my mom, I hate, you know, I can't believe you bring this film in, I don't know. And the lady just sat there real calm, just smiled and told my mom, you know, just let him go. Just let him do what he's going to do. He has to. And I try to get mad at her and I go, and who do you think you are? And she's like, it's, you know, it's okay, you know, it's fine. You know, you can go. I wanted something out of her, but she just wasn't giving it to me, you know. I think she knew better now. I think she might have been part of the program. I know that I haven't met her, but she might have been. You know, she had seen it so many times already. She had been a part of it. She goes, you know, I know what you're about, man. I know. And it sucks, but my mom's crying. And today I get out and I go, I think I'm there for like 3 days on the Vicodin. You know, I had a hole in here. I had like a patch. And the doctor said, he's like, don't smoke, don't drink, because you could die. Right? Obviously. 3 days out, I get a ride over there, and you know, and crying, my mom leaves me just like, what the hell's wrong? But I was a violent dude. I was crazy. I never hit her or nothing, but I seemed like I would. I was scary enough for her to be like, hey, if you want to go, you know. So she took me, and I went, and I got high, and I got drunk 3 days after. I was there for a good another weeks, right? Dragged on. I mean, this happened for years. That was like, I think, you know, 3 years into it, and this just happened. It kept happening. My family approached me and they wanted me to go to an outpatient treatment. I don't know if you guys know what outpatient is. It's where you go for like once a week, twice a week, and they tell you all these things, and you get mad and you go and get high. No, I'm just kidding. It's not that. It can be very productive, but that's what, you know. I remember they can't confront me about it. My disillusioned mind thought nobody knows. Somehow. It's not that bad. Somehow. And it's just going to get better. Somehow. Right? No. My sister came, you know, my older sister, she's the one that always watched out for me. She's the one that took care of me. They all had their kids, right? And I think that was kind of her thing. She wanted to see me succeed and wanted to see me do well. And she told me, crying, you know, you got a problem, you know, you got something's wrong. How can I help you? And I just, you know, I broke down and I was like, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know how. You know, because I really didn't know how. And she said, well, you know, she had money. She was well-to-do. She went to you know, school and did her thing. And she goes, well, if I pay for this treatment, will you go? And I didn't know what else to do, you know, because I was turning 18. And everybody that's, I think, a man in here knows that's when kind of the cutoff point, right? They'll give you till 18, most if you're lucky. Some families, they like that, right? Mine was like that. They said, you know, this is how it's going to be. When you turn 18, you're either going to liven up and hopefully everything goes good or you're going to go somewhere. So I went to the outpatient treatment program and I would deny the alcoholism. And I'm an alcoholic, man, full blown. If we drink right now, I'll drink my beer, I'll take his beer, take their beer, go get more beer, come back and be like, where's the beer? That's how I am. It's true. I know that has a reaction, but at the time I lied. I told the counselors, you know, with this anger, with this animosity, you know what, this is bull crap, you know, I'm not even an alcoholic. I did harder drugs. Another lady, real calm, real nice lady, goes, all right, come in the office. And she gave me an NA book. And she goes, we're not even supposed to give you none of this stuff. We're not supposed to even talk about this stuff. But if you think there's a problem with NA, you know, there's a program for you. Read this. I love reading. You know, I always loved reading. I was always good at reading. So I read the thing. I honestly can say I read that thing front to back. And for the first couple months, just reading it did something to me. You know what I thought? You guys want to know something? When I read the first couple chapters, I thought, this is a book they wrote about me. My family told them all my secrets, and they're trying to psychologically mess with me, right? They have to, because there's no way they would know all these things about me and the way that I am. Right? Talk about sick, twisted thinking, man. Right? That's crazy though, right? But I kept reading and I read through and here's the thing though, I never got a sponsor. The 12 steps scared the crap out of me. Mainly because I didn't think I could do them, but mainly because I was a liar. That's what the alcoholism and the addiction did to me. I lied. I didn't have the capacity to be honest with anyone else, let alone myself. But I read, you know, and I liked what I read. And then I got to the stories, and around the stories, man, here's the crazy, I remember at the time I was doing better, everything was getting better, I was in continuation school, La Sierra, but I was, you know, I wasn't any closer to passing, but I was doing well. I was telling my friends, you know, I had all these opportunities to fight, and I was like, you know what, I'm just going to chill. I kept making right decisions, you know, positive in my family, everybody was happy, everybody was cool, everything, I was drawing again, you know, I love to draw, it's one of the things I lost. I drew a lot, too, I drew a bunch of, you know, pictures. I don't have none of them now, but I drew them at the time. And I went out again. You know, we had something happened. Something good happened, which sucks to say that. But, you know, everybody that should have graduated. I didn't get to graduate, but I had done good, right? So guess what? I deserve it. Kegger, my friend had a kegger. I went and did the kegger. Somehow, I don't, and I could see I don't know how. I know how, right? I know how. We ended up doing drugs, and we ended up that night. I go back anyways after everything and relapsing after a couple months. And I go with this shame, you know, and this pain. And all, I had nothing in my room. I'd sold everything or gotten rid of it by then, you know. All I had was that book. So I read the damn NA book, right? Faded. And it was a horrible story about this guy. He went for a long run, and he ended up living in this house. This abandoned house, man. When all they would do is they'd go out, do crimes, come back and get the drugs, do the drugs there, go out, do crimes, you know. But one night they go out, and he has to stay and watch the house, and they don't come back. And I'm reading all this panic, you know, this fear. And it just hit me, man. I'm like, man, this is going to be my life after a while, you know. I was out there again. I ended up getting kicked out, and I got my own place with a brother-in-law of mine who also had an addiction. And I just drank and got high. That's all I did there. But the difference was there, man. The outpatient program did this for me. I had one counselor who told me, he goes, you know, you have a big problem with lying. He called me on it. He goes, but you're not lying to me, man. I know you got high. You know, I already know this. I have the paper right here. He goes, you're lying to yourself, though, if you think there's not an issue going on right now. And we had ping pong tables and pool tables and money and stuff. And dude, I just was miserable. All my friends were looking around while we were drinking and chilling. And they're like, what's wrong, man? You know, there's girls. We're having a good time. I just thought, in a little while, all this is going to be gone. We're going to lose it all. In a little while, we're going to be like that dude, you know, scared. And we did. We ended up like that. We lost the house. Ended up homeless for a while. Had to survive out there. It's a real shock, man, when the sun goes down. And normally you have a place to stay, and then you don't have a place to stay. It dawns on you like, oh, damn, I messed up, didn't I? And then you just suffer. But I suffered, you know, and it seemed worth it still. I still suffered through it. Still wasn't enough. Still wasn't enough. More people died. More things like that happened. More loss, right? More suffering. And I ran amok. I kept running amok. And I just got tired, man. I've been to jail. I wasn't really worried about it. I just didn't want to deal with it. I knew I had to do a year. And I just, you know, I just took off. I went in and I was dealing with it at the time. That again, it could be bad or good, because like I said, good things happen and I thought I deserve to get high. Bad things happen and then, oh, poor me, I need to get high, right? I took off when they told me I was going to do a year and I left and I just ran amok. I was homeless. I remember I was sleeping outside like on the floor and I looked up and I just went, you know. I don't know about you guys' belief in God. I know, I think I used to believe when I was little, because it's easy to believe in something when you're little. They just tell you, believe in this, this is what it is, whatever. Right? And you go with it. But when you get a little older, you start seeing discrepancies. You go, no, this is weird. This is off. Why does God let bad things happen, you know? I was angry with them. I didn't want to call to them. I didn't want to pray. I didn't want to think about God. What the hell is God going to do for me, you know? Get me high. Give me gear, right? I don't know. That's all I really cared about. That's the thing. That's the sickness in me. That's all I care. That's my perspective, right? I was so tired, man. I didn't know what the hell else to do. And I said another half-assed prayer, right? Because I broke the first one. I didn't fulfill the promise I got out of that situation. I didn't fulfill it, though. You know, I didn't do my end. I looked up and I went, you know, I said, I don't know if you're there. I don't know what the hell you are or what to call you or whatever. I just know I'm tired. And if I keep living like this, it's not life to me. This is like I did something wrong and you're punishing me. And I said, so if you want to punish me, man, just let me die. Just let me go to sleep and let me die, that we don't have to deal with this no more. And if not, then do something, because I can't do it no more. And I crashed out on the floor, and I think I smoked a cigarette or something, whatever. Woke up, and I went out, and I walked down the street, man. And my friend, I hadn't worked in a long time. My self-esteem was down. I didn't think I could do a job, because I'd been homeless for so long, and I didn't know how to do it anymore, you know. My friend just told me out of nowhere, you want a job or what? And I went, yeah, man, you know, yeah, that'd be cool. So we went and we worked. We sanded down the benches. I don't know if you guys go to court. All those benches? It's all me. It is. It's true. I just sort of got. I went over there and I put them in myself. But that was my job, you know, and that gave me self-esteem back. That gave me self-respect back. But more than that, it gave me like, hey, something happened, huh? That little half-assed thing worked, man. That was weird. That really tripped me out, man. That really did. And I'm the kind of person, like, I'm not going to sit here and lie to you guys and say I know the answers and I know what book to read or whatever. I just know when something works for me, the drugs work for me. They got me high and they got me to feel good. They got me to feel something. That's what I did, because it worked. I started realizing that little shout out, that worked, right? Simple as that. Next day, another half-assed one. Hey, can you help me keep the job? I don't know, you know? Still getting high, still partying, right? Because that's how we are. It's a slow process. It's not like, you know, I don't know anybody that had the Shazam, but I didn't have it. Slow process. I end up spending money on movies instead of beer or liquor. You know, I go and watch a movie, and the movies I watch are brutal. The Departed, I don't know if you guys have seen The Departed with Jack Nicholson. That dude dies at the end. It's like, what's the whole point of all this? You know, it just started hitting me like, damn, this is... But I started getting connection again, because you're kind of out of place when you're homeless. You don't feel like you're part of society. And I thought, you know, I could do this again. I could get a job. So I start going and get applications out, things like that. Right? I ended up going to jail anyways. I had to go in, and I went in, and I wasn't worried, man. I just kept trying to do the best I could, you know. And I've been in jail before, and it was a real brutal place to be. Real brutal. The last time I went, though, I went in there with a different perspective, a different outlook on things. I got to tell you, man, they put me in a weird unit. They put me in a unit because I usually go in, you know, banging. I'm like, yeah, whatever, I'm here, I'm there. The last time I went, I was just tired, and I was just praying. And I go, you know what, I'll go wherever. Put me wherever. I just want to, you know, get it over with. And they put me in a weird unit with this Indian dude, this long-haired Indian dude, man. And these other people, we had like a little bit of everybody. We had whites, Mexicans, northern, and it never happened. That's the thing. I've never seen it happen like that. And everybody was real positive. Everybody was like, you're going to be all right, Rick. You're going to be okay. You know, just move forward. And I was getting ready, and I was getting healthy, and whatever. I go, you know, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do what I have to do. I saw the judge, and I go, all right, if I have to do a year, I have to do a year. And the judge took one look at me. He was the same judge I had the whole time, like damn Peyton, the whole time I had him. And he goes, Albert, Mr. Torres, because how you feeling? I'm like, man, you know, I feel all right, I guess. And he says, okay. He goes, you have all these things you're supposed to do a year. You have to do anger management. You have to do, you know, all these other things. Are you going to do it? I'm going, what do you mean? You know, I got to do a year. And I'm like, yeah, I guess I'll do it. You know, if that's what you want me to do. And he said, all right, you can go. Bam. The year went to nothing. Right? I was out that day. Again, the fear set in. I had a choice to make, though, walking home that day. They let me out in the paddy wagon with everybody. First thing I do, like a dumbass, I get a cigarette, right? New cigarette. Smoking a cigarette, nervous. You know, I hadn't had a cigarette in, you know, forever, and I was just like nervous. I go, what am I going to do? So I'm walking. I'm going to go to my friend's house, and I'm going to tell her, hey, if you want some drugs, I can get it. Right? For some reason, she's just not there. Right? So I go, man, what am I going to do now? I could keep going that way. You know, I could go out and do the whole thing again. Something inside me said, that was stupid, Ricky. That was dumb. You know, you just got out. I went to my sister's, you know, and I had to do some begging and I had to do some pleading, but I remember praying too, you know, going, let me stay here. Please let her let me stay here. And she did. And from there, man, everything's kind of just been turned around for me. I came into the program. I found people that accepted me and the damage and understood the damage. I remember I relapsed and I thought everybody was going to be like, get out of here, you piece of crap, you know, and they all clapped. Good job. Like, I'm like, what the hell am I getting there? Right? And that's part of it, you know, that's what you learn later on as you go through it, is everybody goes through the same things, kind of. You have to kind of balance out at some point. Right? I got a sponsor, man, and they put me with them. They pointed to him and said, you're going to be this guy's sponsor. I still kind of tear up thinking about him, man. He's a cool dude, older dude. Didn't know him, didn't know nothing about this guy. Random dude, they just pointed at. They asked me to be your sponsor, Ricky, if you want him. And that's going to be your sponsee, Chuck, if you want him. I said, all right. You know, and I went with this guy, man. This guy got me through the steps. Sometimes he was hard on me. Sometimes he told me stuff I didn't want to hear. He told me, you can't do that no more. You know? Stupid. No. Can't do that no more, Ricky. What's wrong with you? You know, you tell me the truth. He was a nice guy, you know. But then he also introduced me to his family. Let me have family time with them, you know. Made me some beef stew. Taught me things. Showed me where he grew up. Showed me his side of it. Let me drive. I didn't have no license. He let me drive. Right? Like Mr. Miyagi, the wax on, wax off. I'm telling you. And that dude was a cool dude, man. He took a lot of time. That's the thing that really, it wasn't the money and all that stuff. To be honest, I was real blessed when I got out. I had a cool job where I was making cool money. And, you know, I wasn't tripping off all that. I was more than happy to pay for my way through whatever. Thank God for that, right? But it was the time and the energy he put into it that helped me through it, right? My sponsor, man, I can't say nothing bad about him. He ended up going back out there a couple times. A couple times he came back, and people welcomed him the same thing, but that's the thing about the sickness, the disease. That's something I knew at an early age with all my friends dying and stuff, that people do die. And guess what, everybody, it sucks to hear that, oh man, bad things are going to happen, right? You're on that cloud nine, I thought everything was cool, we just got our chip. Nah, he ended up dying, right, really quickly, too. And I was faced with that. I go to the funeral, man, I break down. And I cry, and I'm just like, I don't know what to do now, you know? What do I do now? Again, I look around, though, there's people from the program there. People from the program told me about it. People from the program been there afterwards. That's what it's about, right? It's the fellowship. It's the unity. It's the knowing you're not alone no more. I've been to conventions, man, where people from Asia are talking, right? From Chinese. I can't speak Chinese, but we have translators. And they're talking about the steps they're doing over there. For real. They're talking about all the stuff they're doing over there the same way we are. People from India, some guy from New York, all these people. It's bigger than us right now. This place is a pretty big meeting. But you got to understand, man, this thing is way bigger than all of us. And we're all lucky to be a part of it. So every time they tell me, you know, I want to do a meeting like this, I'll go do a meeting like this. I'll go do a meeting with one person, right, if I can. All you really need is honesty, right? That's the thing about me that I had to come to terms with, is that lie. You can lie to everybody. I can lie to everybody in here. And I didn't lie to Dave. I can know that, right? But I could have. But again, that's the thing, is you're only lying to yourself, you know, if you go through all these things I went through, for me anyway, and go, there's not an issue, right? I still like it. It's still fun. Right? Exactly. And once you feel that inside of you where it's not doing the trick no more, where the high don't get you high no more, it just causes you pain. And the drunk, when you drink, you just, same thing, right? You do crazy things when you drink. And you don't like it no more. You don't like the person you're becoming. It's as simple as this, man. Be honest with it. Ask for help with it, because it's a sickness. If you're sick, if you had diabetes, would you sit there and just die? Hell no. You go to the doctor and tell your whole family, don't put sweets around me, you get help, all this support. But for some reason, there's a stigma with alcoholism and addiction. You feel shame. You feel there's something wrong with me. It's me. It's a disease though, man. It's in medical books. Doctors are saying it. It's the truth though. Because it just gets worse and it kills you over time. But just like that diabetes can be treated, this can be treated. Everybody that's here, you're treating it, right? Congratulations. So, just stick around. My time's not quite up, but I'm cool with that.